Welcome to Lyrical Legacy, the hidden stories of iconic songs. Today we're diving deep into the cosmos of David Bowie's Space Oddity. I've always been fascinated by how this song, released just days before the Apollo 11 mission, captured both the thrill and the anxieties of the space race.
It's remarkable, isn't it, the way Bowie tapped into this collective sense of wonder and trepidation. I'm particularly drawn to the melancholic beauty of Space Oddity, how it contrasts with the triumphant narrative surrounding the actual moon landing. It's like a counterpoint, a darker reflection on human ambition and isolation.
Exactly. It raises so many questions. Was Major Tom a hero or a victim? Was he a reflection of Bowie himself, feeling lost in the vastness of his own burgeoning career? And how did this song, initially intended as a novelty record, become such a timeless classic?
Well, let's start with Bowie's inspiration for Space Oddity. The text mentions Stanley Kubrick's 2001, A Space Odyssey, as a key influence. Apparently, Bowie saw the film multiple times and it really sparked something in him.
He said it freaked him out, especially the trip passage. It makes sense. 2001 explores themes of technology, human evolution, and the unknown, all of which resonate in Space Oddity. Plus, there's that sense of cosmic dread, of being adrift in the vast emptiness of space that permeates both works.
Absolutely. The film provided a visual and thematic landscape for Bowie to work with, but the song wasn't solely inspired by 2001. The text also mentions Bowie's breakup with Hermione Farthingale as a significant factor.
Right. He even said she was the first person he wrote for and about on a personal level. That sense of loss, of feeling disconnected, probably fueled the creation of Major Tom, this solitary figure floating away from Earth and everyone he loves.
It adds another layer to the song's meaning. Major Tom's isolation in space becomes a metaphor for Bowie's own emotional isolation. And in a way, it speaks to a universal human experience, the fear of being alone, of being lost and disconnected.
And then there's the music itself. Space Oddity marked a departure from Bowie's earlier, more music hall-influenced sound. He embraced psychedelic folk, drawing inspiration from artists like the Bee Gees.
Yeah, the text compares Space Oddity to the Bee Gees' New York mining disaster in 1941, noting similarities in their use of minor chords and chorus structures. It's interesting to see how Bowie blended these influences to create something new and unique.
And we can't forget the cultural impact of the 1969 moon landing. Space Oddity, though not explicitly written about the Apollo 11 mission, became inextricably linked to it.
The BBC even used it as background music during their coverage of the landing. It's ironic, considering the song's dark themes of a stranded astronaut. It seems they might not have been paying close attention to the lyrics, though, as the text notes, Bowie was overjoyed by the exposure.
It's a strange coincidence that propelled the song to fame, and it speaks to the power of music to capture the zeitgeist, even unintentionally. Space Oddity became an anthem for the space age, reflecting both its hopes and its underlying anxieties.
The song's exploration of themes, such as isolation and the human condition, is what makes it so enduring. It's not just about space travel, it's about the search for connection, the struggle to find meaning in a vast and often indifferent universe.
So we were talking about Bowie's enduring legacy, and it's incredible how prolific he was even after his supposed retirement in 2006. It's like he just couldn't stop creating.
Right. It's inspiring, really. The man had a heart attack, supposedly slowed down, and yet he still managed to release multiple albums, tour extensively, and even dabble in acting. It's a testament to his drive. What about that a reality tour, though? Massive.
Huge. 722,000 people? The biggest grossing tour of 2004? That's not slowing down. That's a victory lap. It makes you wonder what he could have achieved if the heart attack hadn't forced him to cancel the rest of the tour.
Yeah. It's a shame, really. But even after that, he was collaborating with Arcade Fire, TV on the Radio, Lou Reed. I mean, the range from stadium rock to indie darlings. He was everywhere, influencing everyone.
It's mind-boggling. And then there's the acting. I mean, The Prestige, Nikola Tesla? That's a pretty significant role, even if it wasn't a lead. He even popped up in Zoolander. Such range.
He clearly wasn't content to rest on his laurels. Always pushing boundaries, exploring new avenues. And don't even get me started on the art collection. A Basquiat selling for over £7 million? That's serious collecting.
Oh, absolutely. It speaks to his deep engagement with the art world, not just as a musician, but as a true connoisseur. And his own paintings? It's fascinating to see that side of him, the visual artist, alongside the musical innovator.
It all paints a picture of a restless creative spirit, someone who was constantly seeking new forms of expression, new ways to connect with the world. Even the Bowie bonds, what a novel idea. Securitizing his music royalties, pure genius.
Genius, but risky, right? I mean, tying your financial future to your past work, that takes guts. It's like he was betting on himself, on the enduring power of his music, and, well, he won that bet.
He definitely did. And then, of course, there's the final act, Black Star. Released on his birthday, 2 days before his death. Knowing what we know now, it's almost unbearably poignant.
It's almost chilling, isn't it, Black Star? Released just 2 days before his death, it's like, oh, a farewell transmission from another world.
It is. I mean, the video for Lazarus, him in the hospital bed, the button eyes. Knowing now, it's like he was preparing us.
Yeah. It's a lot to process. And the music itself, so experimental, so unlike anything he'd done before. It's almost as if he knew he was transcending, moving beyond the earthly realm.
There's a real sense of finality to it, but also a sense of Meihojin. I don't know. Hojin peace, maybe? Acceptance?
Maybe. That's certainly a powerful statement. So moving away from the later years, I think we should go back and talk a little more about Space Oddity itself and its impact.
I mean, to be used during the actual moon landing coverage, that's incredible.
It's a bizarre juxtaposition, right? This song about a stranded astronaut played as backdrop to this monumental achievement. Almost darkly comedic when you think about it.
Totally. I wonder if anyone at the BBC actually listened to the lyrics. Ground control to Major Tom. Your circuit's dead. There's something wrong.
Huh. Probably not. They were probably just caught up in the excitement, the spectacle of it all. But, I mean, it worked out brilliantly for Bowie, didn't it? It launched the song, and arguably his career, into the stratosphere.
Absolutely. It's like this strange twist of fate, this cosmic irony that cemented the song's place in history. It became this accidental anthem for the space age.
And it's interesting how the song continues to resonate with people, even decades later. It's not just a product of its time. It speaks to something deeper, something about the human condition.
Yeah, that feeling of isolation, of being lost in the vastness. You know, it's something we can all relate to, whether we're astronauts or rock stars, or just
regular people trying to find our place in the world.
Exactly. That's the genius of Bowie. He took this very specific scenario, this astronaut adrift in space, and turned it into a metaphor for the universal human experience of disconnection, of searching for meaning in a world that often feels cold and indifferent.
So reflecting on the space race, it wasn't just about getting to the moon first, was it? It was about so much more.
No, absolutely not. It was a complex tapestry of scientific endeavor, political maneuvering, and, well, a whole lot of Cold War posturing.
Suzuki's point about the Soviet Union's dominance in the smaller benchmarks is fascinating. It really shifts the narrative, doesn't it?
It does. We tend to focus on the big one, the moon landing, but the Soviets were quietly racking up wins in lunar exploration. First impact, first photos of the far side, first soft landing.
Mm-hmm.
They were really pushing the boundaries.
It's like, they were laying the groundwork, and then the U.S. swooped in for the grand finale. Almost a bit unsporting when you think about it.
Well, history is written by the victors, as they say. But Siddiqui's perspective gives us a more balanced understanding. It wasn't a simple win-lose scenario. It was a multifaceted competition with both sides achieving incredible things.
And the Cold War context is crucial, right? McDouglas highlights how space exploration became this proxy for ideological battles.
Exactly. It was about showcasing different political and technological systems. The U.S. emphasized transparency, democratic values, while the USSR championed their centralized, state-driven model.
Mm.
It was a battle for global prestige played out in the vastness of space.
And it's fascinating how that rivalry, that competition, spurred such rapid advancements in technology. It's like necessity is the mother of invention on a global scale.
Totally. And even after the Cold War ended, the legacy of the space race continued with collaborations like the Shuttlemir program and the International Space Station. It's like the competition evolved into cooperation, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And now we're seeing a renewed interest in lunar exploration with programs like Artemis and the Luminations. It's like, The race is on again, but with different players and different goals.
It'll be interesting to see how this new chapter unfolds. Who knows what incredible discoveries await us? One thing's for sure, though. The human desire to explore, to push the boundaries of what's possible, that's a constant. Mm.